everyone, and welcome to the Saturday edition of JFG Tonight. Come chill with me. The news aren't super fascinating, so I thought I would title Ask Me Anything. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Go Away says, I got a free fillet of baza fish today. Gonna cook it for dinner tonight. I don't know what baza fish is. Is it a white fish? I suppose. Don't know what it is. Never heard these words. Baza fish. All right. Florida ban on transgender gender transitioning for anyone under 18 years old is now in effect. That's one of the news. It is now in operation in Florida. There are protesters who had these signs, RIP trans youth. I don't think they will die. I think that it's a very good thing to be waiting for until they are adult, and then they can take these dramatic decisions for their lives, for their reproductive lives. And there's really no cost in waiting. There's no cost in letting them a couple of years to really decide. Do you really want to take that route? There's no cost in informing people more. Because these people who throw themselves in this process, I don't think they've seen the pictures I've seen. I mean, I cannot even show them on the stream. I cannot even show you the results of these surgeries, but we're talking about making a penis that looks like a bologna, basically a gigantic sausage of meat, from the meat from your arm or from the meat from your leg. It is not something I would recommend. Not something I would recommend to anyone to go through this process. It is absolutely worrying, and I'm sure it comes with all sorts of sufferings and all sorts of dysfunctions. It is the creation of an injury where there was none. And it is, in my view, it is in contradiction with the principles of medicine. You don't create an injury where there is none. And that, from just a bacterial perspective, it's nonsense. It's a regression. Because when medicine progressed a lot is when we started understanding bacteria, infection, open wounds, and the healing of wounds. To intentionally expose someone to these risks that were not exposed to them, and to do it on top of it as a child, or to put them at least on the path toward this using hormones, is a very dramatic thing. I cannot believe that society has headed that way in my lifetime. End of the line, Joel says, did Scott Adams really plan his cancellation as he claims, or is he just post-hoc rationalizing it after the fact? He went on another mega rant today on his podcast. Yeah, I am convinced that people who do this professionally, like me, are very intentional about it. And I was intentional about it. Self-cancellation is an art, and that's how I've covered the Scott Adams performance. It is a live performance art. People don't necessarily understand that on the public space, what you see is a bunch of performers. That doesn't mean we don't believe in what we express, but it is a science of circus and attraction and entertainment. And sometimes self-canceling, especially if you're in the situation as Scott Adams, divorced, old, nothing to lose, already rich, independent for the rest of his life, what does he have to lose? Of course, that makes it extremely appealing. I've been engaging in the self-cancellation process very early in my life because I wanted to be a young graduate. I wanted to be the youngest graduate of the school of self-cancellation. And I think, you know, still as of today, there aren't many people out there who were part of my class, if you will, who were part of my of the first people on the internet to say, all right, I don't give a shit going further, going into the future. Go Away says, Jeff, when reviewing that Andrew Tate video, you said it was gay to sleep with a trans woman. Does that mean it is heterosexual to have sex with a trans man with no boobs, chest, and facial hair, and one of those penises? No. It is gay to have sex with someone who is man or who is displaying malehood. That's what gay is. That is what homosexuality is. So it is my position that there doesn't have to be a symmetry in this. You're trying to call out a symmetry between the trans woman and the trans man. My answer to you is, if there is any ounce of masculinity, whether displayed or real or biological or not, it is gay. Blanket says, Jeff, who is your favorite, one of your favorite book authors? Did any author give you inspiration to write your book? Yeah, I've answered that question very often. Richard Dawkins and The Selfish Gene is... And The Extended Phenotype are, to me, the most important books, the great reveals of my life. I've read them very young, and that's what threw me on the path to understanding biology, and they are definitely the basis upon which the revolutionary phenotype is based. There is nothing more important than these books. They really sum up the evolutionary vision that we should have, and that is valid, and that to me provides explanatory power over so much of the things I was wondering about. I was wondering about economics, society, and I found the answers, although Richard Dawkins has never assumed these answers, but accidentally, kind of, he communicated these answers to me because he wrote a book ultimately about frogs and beavers, but you just have to read that book understanding that he's not talking about frogs and beaver, although he thinks he is. You have to read that book understanding that there's no reason why the principles he states there don't apply to humans. And once you've understood that key, Richard Dawkins is still, to me, a very, very good author. And it's just too bad that he felt the need to spice it up is scientific discourse with liberal thinking, because every time the liberal thinking comes in, it throws him off of the path of truth. Every time it comes in, it's to deny something that shouldn't be denied because it's true, and that really sucks. T.S. Apostolos says, what is the extended phenotype of a car, JF? Well, the extended phenotype can only be applied to replicators. And so because a car is not a replicator, there is no extended phenotype of the replicator. Now, if you want to play loose with the definition and say phenotype is the cause, is the set of causes emerging from a thing, well, then the extended phenotype of the car is everything that the car results in, including carrying you to your job. So everything that you do at your work would be an extended phenotype of the car. But the thinking around the extended phenotype does not work if you apply it to non-living things, if you apply it to things that don't reproduce. And before you tell me, well, JF, there's many copies of the car, so they do reproduce, they don't. And you have to read The Revolutionary Phenotype to understand in full while they don't. But they don't, because no one is looking at the car to make the next copy of the car. Car systems are a queen sterile worker system, where if there's any queen, it is the blueprint of the production of the car. But as far as the cars go, no one is copying them. The problem is life to evolve, to have natural selection. You need the copies to be made from one another. It doesn't matter if you have a central process that produces 1 million cars that are all the same. This is still not replication. Replication relies on, you would have to have the accident with the car, And then someone would 3D print a car from your accident car, from the car that had an accident. Now, this would be life. This would be a replication system, and then the cars would evolve. Because as you 3D print the car that had an accident, you would make some errors, and there would be some features of the accidents that are preserved. Then you would have a mutation. But we don't have this, and this is such a easy thing to understand, but yet it is very often messed up by evolutionary thinkers, and particularly by those who think loosely around mimetics and transmission of culture. And, you know, you have to have this fundamental distinction between a central process create many copies of a thing that is not replication. A thing must create a copy of itself for it to be replication. That thing must lead to a copy of itself that incorporates the mutations that have happened during the lifetime of that replicator. In the case of a car, it would be something like an accident or a scratch that would be copied onto the new car. Men Like God says, Jeff has mentioned in the past how much he likes Euclid. Yeah, Euclid is also one of my big readings. You know, Euclid, the elements, you can Google it. It's available in Java form on, you know, in little displays on the internet. This is one of my first readings I've had when I've got the internet, you know, around 12 years old or something. I got the internet, and somehow I landed up on this very old web page, which is still live. It's unbelievable. It is still live, a university web page that was explaining, that was basically an English translation of the many, many books of Euclid. And that is some serious stuff, man. If you want to just frame, if you want to train your brain at having proper framing in the search for truth, Euclid is absolutely fundamental. And the intellectuals in the classical times, like 17th century, 18th century, they were heavily exposed to Euclid. Einstein himself has read Euclid very early in his life. And I think it's a very, I think basically, you know, out of all the nootropics, the different tricks for memory that people practice, and they're like, Jeff, how do I improve my memory? Bro, don't improve your memory. Read Euclid. Read Euclid when you're somewhere between 8 and 12. It's going to shape your brain forever. Euclid gives you the full structure of epistemology better than any philosopher could lay it out. That's why philosophy is kind of always, you know, it's a non-productive endeavor. It's because you learn so much more by doing it. Euclid did it. He did it for geometry, and he showed how very, very basic principles could be extrapolated into real knowledge, knowledge that you're sure of, knowledge that you know where it stems from, knowledge that you know when you would have to abandon that proposition because its basis has been questioned. That is what Euclid gives, and he gives it in the form of hundreds of propositions around geometry. And it's so fascinating because when you see geometry being developed in later modern times, you see sinus, cosine, tangent, you see all these things. They were all in Euclid. Euclid had understood triangles to a point where the numerical mathematics almost deprives the young brain today of understanding truly triangle. Because I've been meeting numerical mathematics of triangle and the relationship between angles and side. And I'm thankful that I knew about Euclid before. Because where you learn, okay, sine is O divided by H, opposite versus hypotenuse, Euclid has such a beautiful way to get into this, and he doesn't have to have the concept of opposite and hypotenuse. It is so perfect. You see where it stems from. The sign really stems from the fact that you can you can draw a bunch of circles in any triangle, and the relationship between each of these circles will be in a certain way. And there are points that he finds like, holy shit, how could you do this 2,000 years ago and more? He's going to take three points that form a triangle, draw a circle around it, and poof, he finds a point. And that's the point that in modern times would eventually like be called the ratio of the ratio of the sine and the cosine, or the ratio of this or that. And he's like, this is a point for him. It's a fucking point. And he doesn't even have numbers to represent it. He doesn't have y equals sin x. He doesn't have anything. He's like, here's this point. It's important to define this triangle. Holy fuck. All of this with two tools, a straight edge and a compass. How could you possibly, with a straight edge and a compass, attain the level of knowledge that was later attained with sine, cosine, calculators, etc., functions, algebra? He did it. Silver Spider says, what was Euclid's IQ? We know very little about Euclid, so I don't know much about. In fact, I believe there are some people who hold that Euclid is not even a man, that it was just a collective, basically. It was a school of various people building this book, and everything is possible. I don't know much about the guy. All I know is he was a Greek, but who did work in Egypt. And so he was traveling around these areas, Greek, Egypt. I believe that what he has accomplished has been accomplished in Egypt, although not the ancient Egypt, the Egypt of the Greek times. That's pretty much all I know about Euclid, and then I know his work, which speaks for itself. Go Away says, that was my interpretation, Tim, but I think JF believes that a trans person, male or female, cannot engage in heterosexual sex regardless of who they have sex with. It is impossible. It's because you're trying to objectify the conception of something being gay. But you know very well, Go Away, that some things can be gay, not in and of themselves, but your engagement with them can be gay. Okay? Like I can say, oh, well, doing this is gay. Now, you may not have engaged with a gay person. There may not have been a zinging of your penis against a male in the event, but it would still be gay to do certain things. And so what I'm telling you is the gayness exists in your mind. The gayness is like the cogito of Descartes. It is a state of your mind. It's in the eye of the beholder. It's not out there. The gayness isn't with whether that person is a male or a female. The gayness is in your state of mind. And this is pretty standard across the right. Owen Benjamin himself says that there are certain acts of sex with women that are gay. He considers that oral sex, anal sex with a woman is gay. So now don't tell me, oh, well, Jeff, what about the truth? Truthfulness of whether that person is a male or a female. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because they could be a total female, a totally beautiful female, and you'd still be gay if you do certain things with her. Blanket says, Jeff, is Odyssey your favorite alt-tech platform? I probably love Odyssey the best, but I do love the other alt-tech platforms too. Yeah. Yeah, I would have to say that, I mean, the reason I'm here is that it's my favorite, ultimately. My revealed preferences speak for themselves. So, yeah, I would say Odyssey is my favorite. I mean, I would be elsewhere if it wasn't. Here's the problem. Rumble is a paying platform where you have to pay a fixed fee per month to stream there. I don't like the idea of spending there. I like the idea of the open internet, and this puts too much of a threshold for the competition. I like a site where I know where I know that anyone could stream and anyone could beat me and anyone could call me out. When you are on Rumble, when you are on Getter, when you are all on these weird MAGA platforms, it's all very commercial. It's all selection. And I don't like the private platforms like Cozy Stream, that kind of stuff. The thing is, I don't want to engage in a private platform where I am elevated above the everyday man of the internet, because to me, that's what it's been from the beginning. I am the everyday man of the internet, rising, standing up for some things that you don't have to stand up for, because I do it for you. I am being delegated a task by the internet to speak out for certain ideas that wouldn't have been spoken of before. That is my view of my... And I cannot, in good conscience, be on a platform where I'm friends with the owner and I'm like, oh, can you start a channel for me? No, I really hate this. I hate the way the media used to work, and I swore to change it, and I'm not going to let the format that was dominating cable news become the thing on the internet, although it's going to become this, you know, whether I like it or not. But at least I'm not going to individually engage in favoring this kind of cigar lounge, guys club type of attitude on the internet. To me, the internet is magical, and we must defend this view of the internet that we created 15 years ago, rather than this whole let's juice the internet for more clicks, for more money, for more. I hate it. Anid says, I have just realized I am gay with my wife 50% of the time. Thanks, JF. Yes. Yes. It may be the case, and I recommend you engage in reproductive sex. It is so much better. You have really the feeling of contributing to eternity. That's the difference between all sorts of non-reproductive sex and reproductive sex, is that nature has made it so that you would have an orgasm because you experience your projection into infinity. I mean, why is orgasm such a special moment for the brain? Well, it's because evolution tried to measure just the importance of this moment. And it was like, holy shit, this is the moment at which not only you create a baby, it's a moment at which you create the line of existence that can survive 4 billion years into the future. Do you realize this? It's like you create the baby who will create a baby who will create a baby. So, of course, orgasm had to feel very special, because it is the only thing you'll ever do in your life that can survive more than 100 years, and in fact, much more than 100 years, potentially billions of years into the future. It's really the only thing that's worth doing as a life form. The rest is all to support you until you get to that point. Dead Star says, JF hasn't done reproduction as much as he talks about it. you can think whatever you want. I am comfortable with my production. I am comfortable with my production. France is in a revolution, but that's also always what France does. People are protesting because Macron has extended the work time, the lifetime of work, to two more years before you can take a retreat, before you can stop working. And of course, the French people, they don't like getting squeezed in the work sector. They are truly solidary on everything like this. That's why they always do protest when it's about work hours, when it's about inflation, when it's about depriving the worker of some rights or extending their work life. And so you have everyone on the streets putting stuff on fire.
Thank you.
And by the way, Silver Spider, I was joking when I said I'm never wearing pants on stream. I was joking. Go away says, Jeff, what age will you retire? Will you allow one of your offspring to take over the JFG Tonight show? No, I wouldn't allow my offspring. If they want to do a career in media, they can, but it will have to be their own career. I wouldn't give my show. A show is too personal. And anyways, I don't see what would be the point. You know, it's you're actually, you might start off better without being associated with my show than if I give you my Odyssey channel. But no, so no, there won't be a replacement of this sort. And what age will I retire? My plan would be to never retire. My plan would be, as I've said many times since the beginning, to die on camera, to basically be here until the last day of my life. All right, the French people always into these these weird things. Micronova has sent two super chats, and if you would like to support the show like Micronova, make sure to add a payment method to your Odyssey. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Make sure you click on the dollar button below the chat if you'd like to send a super chat. Micronova says, in the shower, I thought about irrational numbers. Can prime numbers be used as a base to find rationality in equations that result in irrational numbers? That's an interesting question. I've been kind of loosely thinking about this. Is there ultimately a relationship between prime numbers and irrational numbers? And there is, there are multiple relationships, but they're not direct. First, because you have to understand what is a rational number, what is an irrational number. A rational number is expressible as a ratio of two integers. So, for example, 6 is rational because it's 6 over 1. But add prime numbers in there, and they're still rational number. 7 is a prime number. 2 is a prime number. 7 over 2 is a rational number. So when we speak of rational number, we speak of something that will be ultimately expressible as some fraction. Some number divided by some other number. So the relationship between, you won't get an irrational number from just simple operations like a division around prime numbers, precisely because division is inherently how we define rational numbers. That being said, how do you get irrational numbers? So you get irrational numbers by having something not be representable as a fraction. And as simple as the square root of 2 will give you an irrational number. So some people, you can Google it if you want, some people have started asking, well, could the square root of any prime number be an irrational number? And the answer is yes. The square root of any prime number is an irrational number. And in fact, the square root of any number that doesn't have paired integers, like if a paired integer prime factorization is one in which the prime factorization of a number like 25, well, is 25, it's 5 times 5. That's a pair in the sense that for each of one prime, you have a copy, a second copy of that prime. So, in reality, the fact that the square root of any prime number leads to an irrational number is not so much because they're prime. It's because they are not paired. It's because a prime number, by definition, is one, whereas you need two for the square root to give an integer result. So, yeah, ultimately, that is what it is. It boils down to there are some relations, but they are not direct because ultimately we're talking about two different things. Prime numbers are, they exist in the space of multiplication and division. Irrational number exist for other reasons, like precisely those operations that are not multiplication and division, something like a square root. Micronova has sent other super chats. He says, what scientific tests would we need to do to test a hypothesis as follows? Were humans created by adding extraterrestrial DNA to an existing missing link simian type bipedal monkey? That is interesting. There would be a couple of red flags if that happened. So if that happened, you wouldn't have continuity. You would have a breaking point between the ape populations and the humans. That breaking point would show probably in segments, you know, because if an extraterrestrial life form came to do genetic engineering, it would be very unlikely that they engineer like nature, that they print mutations pretty much equally spaced across your genome. They would probably have played with a section of the genome, and they would have done so in one shot or in many shots, but certainly not in the distributed way that nature does. So the first thing you would notice is one big part of your genome completely different from the others. We don't have this. Even if you were to take the case of the chromosome that we differ with other apes, you would find that this chromosome is actually a chromosome that existed in apes. It just got plugged onto our chromosome too. So even this, the biggest difference that we know of that distinguish humans from the rest of apes is ultimately also looks like an accidental event. An extraterrestrial life form wouldn't have taken the existing ape chromosome, plugged it into chromosome 2 in reverse. That looks like an accident. It doesn't look like genetic engineering. So yeah, you would have plenty of signs. You would have a section of the genome completely played with. The mutation rate in that section would be widely different. And most importantly, you would have a trace that at some point in our evolutionary history, like these modifications were made toward functionality. Because when we look at life forms, there is a ratio between those parts of the genome that serve nothing and those parts of the genome that serve something. And systematically what we find, and it's very disappointing for a scientist because systematically it sends us back to, okay, it's just gibberish, really. Systematically what we find is that for every mutation that works and that mattered, all sorts of other mutations didn't matter at all, and they're all blurry and noisy, and they vary a lot across the population. This contrast between these two is extremely important. In fact, it's how it came in the discussion, you know, that we brought and that people like pathogenetics brought about Omicron and determining whether it was from a lab leak. This ratio between the functional parts of the genome and non-functional parts or the synonymous mutation, the non-synonymous mutation, this is all very important. So basically, the answer to your question is we would approach this extraterrestrial genetic engineering question in the very same way we approached it with Omicron, just at a different time scale. That's very interesting. Micronova, in comment on the prime numbers, he says, very fascinating creation, prime numbers and irrational numbers without a pair, like unbalanced atoms that have a half-life in shorter time spans. Yes, it's very interesting, the features of the square root, of any root, really. The cubic root, the n root. They are really looking at paired primes. They are like, if there's a paired prime, it's going to send back down to a to that prime. Or, you know, in the case of the cubic root, if there's a tree of a given prime, it's going to send back to that prime. But if there's anything else to mess up the number, if it's 5 times 5 times 5 times 7, the cubic root finds itself having to find the cubic root of 7. And that is going to be, I believe, although I've not done the research on cubic roots, but I believe it's going to be an irrational number. Mikael Asman sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, are concepts like social Darwinism and survival of the fittest applicable to human society? Oh, well, I mean, you may not be an audience member of regularly of this show, but definitely, that's what I think. Survival of the fittest. The thing with survival of the fittest is it's kind of a red herring that directs you away from what truly matters. But if you understand what truly matters, then it's okay to talk about survival of the fittest. But the reality is it's not just about survival. It's about survival, reproduction, and the reproduction of what you produced as part of your reproduction. So it's, as Richard Dawkins makes the case, it's the full line of descent. Because you could have people who survive perfectly, but they don't end up making babies. That's worth nothing evolutionarily. You could have people who make a lot of babies, but they can't care enough for these babies so that the babies are capable of making babies themselves. That would also be worth nothing from an evolutionary fitness perspective. The only thing that is truly valuable is to make babies. It's to survive, to make babies, so that these babies make babies, so that these babies make babies, so that these babies make babies. And so that's why the only evolutionary strategy is one that throws far enough into the future the kind of capacities of the parent, the capacities of the ancestors, that whatever those things are, the great-great-great-great-grand descendants will be good enough to outcompete whatever is there against them. Ariel Suarez says, now in modern society, who would the fittest be? Oh, that's another thing that's very good to bring to Mikael. It's that never forget that the fittest is not necessarily the Chad with the big muscles or the guy with money or the female with beauty or charm. It is not necessarily this. Sometimes the fittest is to be fat, poor, unintelligent. Sometimes that's what the fittest is. Let's never forget. So it's not because something is socially desirable or undesirable that it tells you anything about evolutionary fitness. There are people who have great qualities, intelligence, beauty, everything you'd like, but they won't end up making babies because they will be drained by a system of, oh, I want to become a model. Oh, well, for becoming a model, I have to have hedonistic sex with photographers. I have to spend so much time of my life concentrating on my career that I can't care about babies. And boom, you have these beautiful features of the human race that are getting farmed out. Same thing for intelligence. The numbers that were obtained recently demonstrate clearly what I've been saying for years. Intelligence is just not a fit characteristic to have in society. They were saying that a 60 IQ has better reproductive success than a 140 IQ. Something like it's like 60 IQ is low. It is like needs help kind of low. It is like even I would help that person. And yeah, so intelligence is going away. Be sure of that. What's happening in France is a dictatorship. Of course, you'll often hear this from French people. All right, not surprising. This goes on all the time in France. Same thing here, some fires. This is pretty regular. Yes, the body shot John Garras was quite impressive. I mean, it was a full charge at maximum speed that he could attain. I don't know. I really don't understand how these entities are even viable, like French society. Who gets paid for oppressing all these protesters? Who gets paid to clean up the city after the mess? Who gets paid to shut down the fires? And how is it possible at all that these cities survive long term? I don't think it is. I think ultimately cities will be abandoned by the intelligent people, at least, and eventually there will be trouble for whoever's dead. Elon Musk published a meme, the banking system is collapsing, arrest Donald Trump! That is pretty much what's happening this week. Unbelievable, this story of Donald Trump is about to get arrested. He's about to get arrested this week. It's an indictment from New York, so it's the same attorneys of New York that are pursuing Donald Trump since forever, since he's been political, basically. And it's so vengeful, it's so petty. The excuse, of course, the indictments aren't public, probably will not be public until the moment of the arrest, and perhaps after, I don't know. But it seems that it's all around the hush money paid to two women. And it's all crap brought up by Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, who's been working so hard at putting Trump in jail that he had to admit crimes in court to say, oh yeah, I committed these crimes with Donald Trump. And he ended up being the only one going to jail. I committed all these crimes with Donald Trump. Okay, well, you're going to jail. You're going to jail, Michael. And Donald Trump didn't end up in jail. But he's trying to do it again. This is the same thing. It's just on a different theme. The fact that Trump would have paid a couple hundred thousand or 100,000, I don't know. And Trump made sure in this whole process of not getting his hand dirty. So he sent his fixer. That's what the leftist media likes to call Michael Cohen. I would call it something else than a fixer if you want my opinion. I would call him lots of cognitive load here, lots of processing. I can't believe that I can think about ideas like prime numbers and rational numbers, and it's so clear in my head, but to find an appropriate label to lay onto Michael Cohen is a very complicated task. Like, I can feel OpenAI, ChatGPT just churning. You can't say this, you can't say that, you can't say this. Michael Cohen was one of these handlers placed in position to potentially be the Achilles heel of a man who had too much powers for a bunch of people who thought that he may at some point use the too much power that he had accumulated in a way that would be disadvantageous to them. And so you always end up having these handlers hanging out, being at the right place at the right time, and it's not random. Michael Cohen is an agent. An agent, let's say, of the left, if you want to call it that way. An agent of the liberal left of America, being there to make sure that Trump does missteps, being there to record them, and being there to betray him at the right time when Trump eventually became a Republican. That is what Michael Cohen is. Those are the methods of CIA, FBI, Mossad. Those are exactly the methods, and they will pull it on everyone, including you, if you somehow become somewhat political. They put people in your surrounding, and then they have these people commit crimes in your name, and then they try to get you for these crimes, or they try to get these people to record some crime that you may have committed. So the hush money would be money that Trump had just before starting his political campaign. James is asking if it's a call-in show. Yeah, sure, we can do a call with James. I'll get you in after I comment on the hush money. So the hush money is Trump paid that money so that they would shut up. Turns out, no matter how much money you pay, there's going to be 14 other women showing up, all claiming that you raped them. So is it really important to pay hush money? My policy is never pay hush money. Just surf on the wave of hate that comes at you. But I'm a different guy. I'm different than Trump. Trump is a man of branding and stuff. So, I don't know what New York will claim that was criminal about this. You can pay money. You have the right to pay money to people. You have the right to pay money to people to retain information that you don't want spread. You have the right to do anything. I think that what they're going to argue is, well, it was fraud because Trump gave his own personal money for this, but it was a campaign expense. And it's like, is that all it's going to be? That Trump was trying to deceive the American government by using personal money to do something that was really meant to... which a priori, this violation would be an executive violation and probably wouldn't reach criminal threshold. But are they going to pull some kind of argument that, oh yeah, Trump did it in a fraudulent manner because he told Cohen to move the money shadily? And basically, we have recordings from this era of Trump's life because Michael Cohen already tried catching Trump on this and failed. And having looked at the recordings back in the days, they seem to show a pretty honest Trump who won't state on the record anything that would put him in trouble, that he would be in trouble for. So Trump is like, oh yeah, send her the money and... Make sure you send a check so that it can be traceable. So what are you going to argue? Like, if someone had the mens rea of a crime, would they say, hey, please do it with a check so that we can have a record of it? That doesn't sound like a criminal hiding something to me. That sounds like Trump paying money in a way that's traceable, in a way that will be hidden from no one. Now, your interpretation that this is Trump's campaign expense, that's your interpretation as a attorney general. Trump may have had a different view of it. Trump may have had a view that, oh no, this is a personal expense because it's about me and my reputation as a businessman, independent of the campaign. I don't think The thing is, I don't think there will be a valid legal argument to make, but they just want to drag Trump in the mud. And they also want to drag Trump in front of a New York jury who might very well hate him so much that they will find him guilty of anything. So I'm extremely annoyed at this week. Although, you know, Trump, I'm not super enthusiastic about his possible presidency anymore because he's had his chance and he did nothing. So nothing, close to nothing. He didn't do as bad as Joe Biden, but... And, you know, it was good to have Trump at the head of America, but it wasn't as good as it should have been. And so I'm thinking that we may not have social conservatism if we get Trump. If he thinks that what he's delivered on the first time was good, that means what he's going to under-deliver on the second time also. So it's going to be even worse than the lightning vaccine speed development. So I'd rather have Ron DeSantis. At least with Ron DeSantis, we're going to get some progression on social conservatism at the federal level. That is much better. Rodi Lacid says, at this point, status quo is light years ahead of Biden. Yeah, that's true. So to finish, before we close, we talk with James. Disclose.tv says, Trump post, he will be arrested on Tuesday and calls for protests to take our nation back. People were having echoes of January 6th here, like, and they are handling this whole arrest of Trump as if there could be lots of disruptions across the country. The Secret Service is involved in coordinating the arrest and even giving orders to the local police at this point. I don't see a big movement of resistance developing, but who knows? Maybe the crazy MAGA people who were, you know, all QAnon, and maybe they're coordinating something. I don't know. Eric Dondero says, why are you such a Jew skeptic? I'm further right than you, JF. Far right MAGA libertarian Republican and Rand individualist bordering on anarcho-capitalist, but you hate me because I'm a Jew. No, I don't hate you. As far as my covering of Jews in people like Michael Cohen, that's a different thing. I don't hate Michael Cohen or you for being Jewish. What I'm saying is my statement on Jews has always been the same. And it's still what I think. Jews exist. And their political interests and the way they process them and the way they treat other groups like whites shows a double standard. When you go after Vladimir Putin, and Vladimir Putin being declared, you know, a criminal in international court, we've never seen this being done with officials of Israel. We've never seen a call for that kind of thing for officials of the U.S. who have participated in wars with Israel in the Middle East. So all I'm calling for here is for fairness between Jewish populations and white populations of America. And no, I don't hate you. All right, let us talk with James. James, hello. Are you hearing me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. So how have you been doing, James?
I'm good. I'm good. Good to hear you again. Good shows lately.
Thank you very much.
From the beginning of the show, you had, again, a regular topic, that gay question. And I had a little bit of a comment on that because dogs, when my parents' dog, whenever I come visit them, he always comes and humps my leg. And then I kick him off. And he runs over and he humps the side of the couch. And then when another dog comes over, he goes and humps that dog. And so animals seem to just not care about this gay heterosexual distinction. They'll just have sex with anything. And we certainly wouldn't label an animal as gay or straight. They're just heterosexual biological creatures. We don't put these labels on them.
Yeah.
And so why do we put these labels on humans as gay or straight when we're animals too?
Well, I guess that there's a lot of labels that are present in humanity that are not applicable to anything else. And the reason is we assume intentionality. We assume that we are beings with such conscience of everything we do that we are able to understand what we do. And so I think it's ultimately a result of theory of mind, intentionality, and the conception that we have that other people are intentional beings. Like we wouldn't call a lion a murderer, but the lion is murdering deers.
So it's just learned behavior. It's not in the genes then. So there's no gene for gayness. It's just a learned behavior from society.
I think that's a non sequitur. How do you see the relationship between what I just said and it's not genes, it's just learned? Because intentionality and our conceptions of it might very well be of genetic origin. It might be a social skill that we evolved.
Well, I could see gayness being a combination of genes that could lead to gay behavior in humans, but that would also maybe someone that's more socially malleable, open to more propaganda, could be so someone that is less able to think for themselves maybe could be more open to be convinced by the modern world to become gay or society or big cities. But that's not a gene for gayness. It's just a gene for social malleability.
Well, it's never a gene for gayness, just like it's never a gene for the heart or the brain. It's a gene that does a couple of things, and it just so happens that one of them results in you having a brain, you having a heart. That has been addressed directly by Richard Dawkins. The conception of a gene for must be super broadened if you want to think properly in evolution. You shouldn't think of a gene for something. A gene does something, and it happens that we can think of it as a kind of shortcut of the mind, as a gene for these things. But it's not a gene for these things. It's a gene that happens to do many things, including a thing.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, I was reading Richard Dawkins' book the last few days, so I remember reading that passage, and yeah. It does make sense, but since there's no it's a broad spectrum of there's no single gene because it has a lot of other effects, the gene, not than just gayness, and we can't obviously pinpoint what it is.
Yeah.
It seems to be very social, and so I don't know. It just I guess that's all I had.
But yeah, I would not continue down the line of what you proposed there. It just seems to be social. That's not a valid way to ask yourself questions about genes and homosexuality. It's not because something is social that it's not evolution, that it's not genes, that it's not natural selection. To the contrary, think of all possible social outcomes as being from the genes. And you'll find that basically it's impossible that they don't come from the genes, because ultimately squirrels don't have these social outcomes. They don't end up acting fabulous on the street on a given month of the year. And so it has to come down to a bunch of genes that we may not want to call for these behaviors, but that certainly cause these behaviors.
Is there any animals that you know that engage in homosexual behavior? Because if it's just a human thing, then it has to be some sort of gene associated with our level of societal complexity and language capacity. Probably.
Yeah, and the left loves to talk about how gayness is normal in nature. I don't know that their case is so solid, but I certainly know that it's been observed. Certain Drosophila flies have a trend toward trying to have sex with any other fly, whereas or some of them might target more males, and then some of them will exclusively try to target females for proper insemination. So it's certainly not limited to the human world, but we cannot exclude the possibility that any gayness we observe and any homosexual behavior we observe in animals could be fundamentally different from the one in humans. It's not because you can call it a thing that it's the same thing. You know, the flies may have this behavior simply because it's not costly. And spreading your sperm, you might as well spread it everywhere, and you're going to catch a female at some point. But it might be that in human homosexuality, there are totally separate evolutionary reasons for it. The two things should not necessarily be confounded just because they can be regrouped under homosexuality.
Yeah, it definitely could be that. But then some gays are just hypersexual people that maybe they're kind of like that dog that likes to fuck everything, or the fruit fly too. So maybe it's part of that gene too. But also, yeah, there's another part of gayness that they it's totally different from that. It's a totally different behavior. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to mentally model it because it doesn't match up to how animals behave when they just try to have sex with everything. And so it,
I think different. That a theory of everything gay can be achieved here. And perhaps I could help you reach that theory of everything gay. And you tell me if this doesn't explain everything that you've observed about gayness. So I like to think of, what if the gene of homosexuality, or the primary gene causing it, is a hypersexualized, feminizing gene that evolves to make females have a lot of babies, and it just accidentally finds itself in males activated in ways that evolution might not have wanted it activated. But whenever it finds itself in males, it gives the exact behavior that would lead a female to have a lot of babies. Extraversion, outgoingness, feminization, care for self-monitoring of the body, and engagement in plenty of sex, and plenty of sex seeking the D of other men. So when I think of a theory of everything gay, I can't think of any feature that is not explained by this theory. What do you think about it?
I've heard you mention this many times before, the fabulous theory. And the one thing I've been skeptical of it, because I don't know, in evolution, is there a mechanism for having humans of either sex wanting the penis, like wanting the dick, like what kind of mechanism is like, that doesn't make any sense to me, how that could be a gene.
Of course it makes sense. I mean,
but how could that be in men?
You have to get
men
out.
Men would never inherit this.
Well, yeah, of course. You have to get out of the thinking gene for. It's not a gene for dick wanting. But if it's a gene that causes fantasies about dicks, it's just as good. And if it's a gene that causes a slightly higher preference of your brain to see a dick or to imagine a dick inside of you, then you're good. The gene is doing its job. So you have to get out of the thinking, oh, I can't think of a gene doing this for this purpose. No, can't you think of a gene that elevates some neurotransmitter in your brain that makes you like something a little more?
Okay, I could see that. So what you're saying is that the females that get this gene produce so many more babies that they overcome the obstacle if a male gets it when they have no babies. So the gene still gets reproduced into people because so many more babies happen when it happens to a female, but so many fewer with the male, but there's still more. But that's almost like a group selection argument, because if a gene doesn't get passed down in that specific holder of the gene, then it dies out. And so it would just die out. It wouldn't make it this long throughout evolution if males had it.
Not necessarily, because there's always the out of a female. So imagine from the perspective of being a female, imagine that this gene makes you have 7x the number of babies you would have had otherwise. Okay, we're in theoretical land here. So yeah. You are the female that is at the origin of a line of descent. You have 7 times more babies. So where people would have 2 babies, you have 14. Out of your 14 babies, 7 of those will be females. These 7 of those who will be females will each have 14 babies too. So down the generation of your grandchildren, you are already having 7 times 14 babies just on the female side of your line of descent. You are at, 28, 17, 98 grandchildren just on your line of descent that relies on half of your babies, which are all females. Now, the other 7 males, what's happening with them? Well, here's the thing. The other 7 males of your babies, half of them will not have received that copy of the gene. They will have received your other copy of that gene because we are a diploid organism. It will have led to a different mix with your husband. And out of these 7 males, 3 or 4 of them will not be gay. They will not have that gene at all. So now you have already 98 grandchildren from your female line. You even have 3 or 4 males that will just reproduce on average at 2 babies per couple. So each of them will give you basically around 6 or 8 grandchildren. You are now at 104 grandchildren. That is evolutionarily advantageous. And does it really matter to evolution that the 2 or 3 guys left at the end who do end up with that gene, that they make less babies? Not so much. You've outcompeted pretty much anything around you.
Yeah. And it makes sense. No, it's a very, it's a good theory. It makes sense. The reason I brought this up is I've known that theory. And I'm just skeptical because I know of just how animals behave in the hypersexuality. And I see that hypersexuality in at least male gaze. And so I'm thinking that they just have that hypersexuality thing to them where they just want to fuck everything. But and there might be a gene for that, but your theory makes a lot more sense, a lot of sense. And yeah.
It's not my theory, to be clear. I've heard these things discussed by Richard Dawkins, Brett Weinstein, and they weren't even the originators of those, but those are very valid possibilities.
Yeah. Well, thanks for chatting with me.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye, James.
Bye-bye.
All right. And Tim Cook has a very... And Tim Cook happens to be called K-O-C-H. It's not because... It's not a name that he has adopted specifically for this discussion. But he has a very interesting statement. He says, if this hypothesis is true, the sisters of gay men should have more babies on average. That is a very interesting way to test this theory. And unfortunately, it is very rare that we get proper measures of evolutionary success in humanity. It's a taboo, and anthropologists, sociologists never gather this data. You know, I have to go to very old articles before I see evolutionary fitness being traced across at least 3 generations. But I would love to have this. I would love to know. It's not just study, because the classical homosexuality study right now is just, okay, we have these genes, we have these behaviors, we have recorded what their parents did to them when they were young. Let's see what caused it. Let's see what the correlative structure of all this. I would love to have a natural selection view on this. And I want from one gay person, I want to know how many children their grandfather, their grandmother had, their parents, their cousins, and then you would have such a clearer view. But we almost never get natural selection relevant data in humans. And that's because it's a taboo. That's because all of the research is based around the individual assumption. We study individual. How did this individual come about? How did he come to be that way or this other way? And holy shit, we would have such a better understanding if we just ask them, how much babies does your sister have? It would be as simple as this. And yet we don't do it. This is so frustrating for a scientist to see. Our entire scientific endeavor is plagued with psychological assumptions and, oh yeah, we have to find the reason in his life why he's that way. But what if the reason was outside of his life? What if the reason was in the cone of ancestors and descendants? And what if the reason was to be found there? That is what I would like people to converge toward. IIRC Life sends $5. Thank you so much. He says, happy 800th episode. Yeah, it's always special when you number a round number like this, because every day I add one number to the episode number. And when it arrives at 800, well, what a trajectory we've been on together. The internet, about 900 episodes of the public space, and then we are at 800 of JFG Tonight. We will soon reach the point where there are more JFG Tonight episodes than there are the public space episodes. So, I don't see the time where I will stop this. I think it's very fun to be here every night with you guys. Speaker's Corner says, JF, couldn't you pay for your own study? Are you crazy? You think I'm going to throw like $1 million to have a couple surveys run? This is not even in my radar of possible expenses. I will never waste money on research. I think that the government does it plenty already, and it shouldn't. The government, I can't wait. I would love to see in my life science be completely abolished by the population. Just whatever motivates them, I don't care. You can be a religious bigot, or you can say, oh, these scientists are fraudsters, and Fauci fraud, Fauci fraud, Fauci anagram for China. And whatever is the motivation, I would love to see the grants to science be just abolished, to see all these hopes of people who got into the university system in this kind of, well, you know, the pyramid scheme. Yeah, it's a pyramid scheme. They go to learn at the university because they dream of being the teacher. That's a pyramid scheme. There's too many people wanting to teach. And so you have this constant growth of the need of a fake need for teaching, which doesn't even address needs of society, which doesn't even address the market forces. And I can't wait for all of it to fall. I would love if it happens. Colin Oxworth says, Jeff, in a society with a strong class structure, with no wealth mobility, would the different classes evolve to become entirely different races? Do you think this could be happening amongst the billionaire class today? It is definitely not happening among the billionaire class today. There is no evidence that there is such a thing as restrictive reproduction among the billionaires. Now, if you look at a billionaire daughter or son, they will end up hanging out and they will end up having a girlfriend or boyfriend that is probably in the millionaire class, probably. But it's not tight enough. The dating pattern is not tight enough that it would lead to a race in the current world. Definitely not. Now, in your theoretical question, what if it was tight enough? What if the rich would only be, because that was touched upon by Charles Murray and Richard Einstein in the bell curve, and they that's a prediction of them that totally missed the mark. I think it totally missed the mark. Now, I've made arguments about this in the past, and I'm sure Charles Murray would have his own view. Perhaps that would be an interesting debate between him and me. So, but leaving aside the question of whether their prediction was true, they thought that there would be a class of highly intellectual people developing into America that would reproduce among themselves. The intellectual elite would end up having intellectual babies, and the stupid people would end up having stupid babies. In a way, their prediction was too broad, because when I look at the genetics of a Ben Shapiro being 100% Ashkenazi Jewish, you realize that something like what Charles Murray was talking about happened, but it's the restrictive dating of the Jewish academics that made it happen, not the per IQ based considerations. Because despite the per IQ based considerations, you go into a university, the Asians are dating Asians, the blacks are dating blacks, the whites are dating whites, and there is much variation in the IQ pairings that we see in couples. So all of this to say, the racial trend still over-dominates the IQ trend, and I don't think that the per IQ-based selection of mates has proven to happen the way Charles Murray and Richard Einstein thought it would happen. Now, suppose that we were thinking about a theoretical society where it happens, then yes, you could have a separation of the races. But most of the time it doesn't, because boundaries in nature don't remain if they don't have a function. So you have to realize that for that boundary to be naturally sustained between high IQ people not wanting at all to breed with low IQ people, and low IQ people not wanting at all to breed with high IQ people, there almost needs to be a bilateral punishment of both sides if they do interbreed. So it would have to be a situation of the kind of, suppose that intelligence is a very important feature to have to survive as a high IQ specialist, but that feature is polygenic in nature, and basically reproducing with anyone who's not intelligent completely makes you lose it, because you don't have the nonlinear genes that are needed to be combined together to become intelligent. And suppose that the unintelligent person would have a punishment for breeding with an intelligent person. So you could think of a situation where, okay, the lifestyle of the low IQ is so different that it requires a set of different genes that have evolved specifically to fill that niche in society. Maybe there are more unintelligent people, but they have a different lifestyle, and they have therefore different natural selection pressure that apply to them, such that if they breed with a high IQ person, they don't get these genes, and they end up producing offspring that is not viable or not successful in society. So a situation like that rarely emerges, and I don't think it would emerge as long as some minimum amount of interbreeding happens. Because you have to have a perfect alignment of punishments that seem weird. It seems weird that these punishments would be that way. What most likely happens is the genes are having various average effects on your phenotype. The genes can be variable even if they're not specifically combined with other genes. The genes of intelligence might serve people of low intelligence living in low intelligence communities. So most of the time, the world is just more average than is made through this theoretical situation. So personally, I think that no, you won't have a division of the classes through intelligence, although you will have a racial basis and a geographical basis that can be sustained as long as it's hard to travel and costly to travel. We are headed toward the conclusion of the show. Perhaps a quick review of the remaining news item that I have not covered. Got robbed again. CNN reporters are in San Francisco. And it's like, oh no, we're getting robbed. They went to the city hall to cover for an interview for CNN. And they get robbed. So that's the point at which criminality in the city becomes extremely costly to the leftist and not costly for those who have escaped the cities. NASA quietly disclosed that a giant city killer asteroid could directly impact Earth on March 25 at over 18,000 miles per hour. Apparently, it's headed to pass. For now, it is believed that it would pass somewhere between us and the moon. That is a pretty close asteroid, passing between us and the moon. Right now, it's like this, and it's kind of added. It could very well collide with the Earth. I mean, close approach and listed its condition number as a 9 on the risk list, meaning that its trajectory is uncertain and an impact event can occur. The simulation data shows that the asteroid safely passing between the Earth and the Moon, however, that can change. Well, worst case scenario. We lose a city. I mean, what are the chances? We'll see. We'll see. I'll be following this closely. And UBS seeks government backstop as it rushes to finalize Credit Suisse takeover deal as soon as tonight. So there are these big deals that are looking to save banks, and everyone is waiting for, oh, we're going to get money. Oh, there's going to be a recovery. And of course, if you're in Bitcoin, oh, Bitcoin should rise accordingly. Bitcoin should rise because the system is doing exactly what Bitcoin was designed to undermine. So the more the system does this, the better it is for Bitcoin. Take our nation back. Trump calls for protest as imminent arrest expected. That I have covered earlier. Stanford students demand journalists remove their names from stories after targeting other students by name. So that's a trend we've seen a lot. You know, Antifa wanting to have their little Twitter account or journal or whatever, and they harass people by name, and then when you name them, oh, suddenly it's a violation of their privacy, and suddenly they complain when they find themselves with their pictures on the ND Note Twitter account. That is how the left does, through double standard and attacking as they cry. There's a saying around it. I don't remember the saying. Attacking you as they cry. They cry out. Go Away says, giving my thoughts and prayers to the system so that I have an opportunity to buy into BTC again. Well, you know, at this point, it's time to buy BTC. I understand that you may have the strategy of waiting for a drop, but it's very possible there will not be a drop. So it's like, do you really want to hang on to your money in the current economic environment, knowing very well that Bitcoin in 2-3 years from now will be above $100,000? Do you really want to be that greedy that you wait for it? You wait for the 10K. Like no one's gonna fuck you in the future because you were the brilliant guy who waited for the 10K. Seriously, like, it doesn't sound good on the first date. Oh yeah, I waited for 10K. Oh yeah, I didn't buy at 27K. I waited for 10K. Most likely, you're going to be the loser who waited for 10K and it never happened. how the most anticipated recession is still unanticipated. Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I'm feeling. I have been for years thinking we are heading toward a recession, and there was kind of a technical recession in that there were two quarters in the red in a row, which is the definition, and the leftist insisted on redefining recession then. But yeah, I still feel that we've not gone through very hard times. Like, if this was all there was in this recession, this was a very small recession. But maybe we've gone through the hard times. Maybe that's as hard as it gets in 2023. I don't know. Ultimately, it boils down to just how much does the government and the Fed want to reactivate artificially the economy. So anyway, all you can do is not care so much about these numbers, not care about the potential of a coming recession, and understand that whatever happens, recession or not, big or not, Bitcoin is doing good in 2-3 years from now. DK Shadow says, wishful thinking, JF. Yes, I do. I love recessions. SVB's London bankers received up to $36 million in bonuses days after the BOE orchestrated bailout. This is pillaging. That's how I titled my show. It's pillaging. Pillaging is happening. Those are all ways in which artificial money that doesn't come from sound market processes. It doesn't come from people desiring your services. It comes from the top down. It's injection of money. And the guys get away with millions of dollars that they can invest on yachts or on their houses or whatever. It's all such crap, this system. I can't wait for Bitcoin to take over and for people to hold onto their assets seriously, and rather than have these flows of artificial money being stolen from people. Speaker's Corner says it's not pillaging, it's hush money. Well, hush money from a place where it doesn't come from ownership and it comes from either the state or central banks. As far as I'm concerned, that's pillaging of the rest of the world. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me. And tomorrow is, maybe I'll cancel the regular show so that I can concentrate on my afternoon appearance on Mathieu's YouTube channel, where we will be giving a course in French on meta-irony. What is meta-irony? How does it help you highlight the truth? That will be my subject tomorrow. Follow my social media, follow my Twitter, be on the Discord. And if you'd like to support the show, be on Patreon, backed by Subscribestar. That's it for tonight. Much love. Thank you.